And you're listening to San Francisco Liberation Radio, 93.7 FM's Liberation News Show. And we've got Al Giordano from Narco News on the line. And I wanted him to talk, first of all, a little bit about what Narco News is, what they've been doing for the past, you know, two some odd years, and the status of media right now in our country and why Narco News had to be formed just to combat that.
Well, Narco News is a newspaper of the internet. It can be found at www.narconews.com, and we cover the drug war and democracy from Latin America. That means we translate the work of the best Latin American journalists, many of whom, although they live under much greater danger than your average North American journalist, they're much more creative and truthful and accurate in their reporting. We offer original reporting. We have a bureau in the Andes out of La Paz, Bolivia, headed by Luis Gomez. And we cover the social movements and in particularly the social issues as they relate to the United States imposed war on drugs in Latin America. Because the war on drugs is carried out down here as an imposition. It's not something that the people of these countries demanded. It's something that the United States demanded of them. And, well, it just hasn't been working. It hasn't been going well. It doesn't stop the drugs. It just creates big crime empires and corrupts everything in its path and makes the drugs expensive and unsafe inside the United States. And our editorial position is that you have to legalize drugs. But we cover
a wide range.
What's going on? Whether it's the imposition of martial law going on right now in Colombia as a result of the U.S.-sponsored Plan Colombia military intervention, whether it's the fact that the indigenous and social movements of Bolivia, led by the coca growers who grow the plant from which cocaine is extracted, recently won significant parts of the country and the Congress in the June 30th elections there. And, of course, last April, the real watershed moment in all America, the America with an accent, when the people of Venezuela overturned a U.S.-sponsored coup d'etat, an attempted violent overthrow of a democratically elected government. And so,
democratically.
We've been doing this. Excuse me?
I said democratically, in quotations.
Well, no, it is the government of Venezuela is more democratic than the government of Florida in terms of how many, you know, the poor people vote. They're allowed to participate. There's not electoral fraud. I don't think you have to put it between quotation marks when you're talking about Venezuela. Increasingly, though, covering these issues, we find that there's a huge gap between what is really happening, what our own reporters and what I personally see out in the field, and what Latin American journalists report, and then what the United States and European English language news agencies report about what's going on down here. It's as if they're covering a different set of continents. And the spin that you'll generally find in the Associated Press, in Reuters, in the big U.S. newspapers and TV stations is almost always spoon-fed by the United States embassies down here and by the corporate interests that are trying to make money at exploitative labor, et cetera, down in Latin America. And so what we do in a very real way is break the information blockade, and this has caused various scandals. It's caused some corrupt journalists to lose their job, but that's as it should be. And as you know, Narco News was also sued by Citibank Banamex, and we won a very important case in New York Supreme Court that established that Internet journalists now have the same rights as the New York Times under United States law, the same First Amendment and freedom of speech rights. And so that's an important precedent, not just for Narco News, but for indie media and for anybody who publishes a website out there. So we've had quite an exciting 2.5 years of publication. We began in April of 2000. It's now September of 2002, and we keep kicking away without selling advertising, without charging money, without making this a commercial enterprise, because we believe that, that press freedom means, and a free press means that you don't pay.
Right.
So
there were some problems recently, though, with funding, and I think it's important for people to know if they do feel like donating money, it's
well, we're not in a fund drive right now. I mean, we lost our laptop, which is our printing press, and we put out one single letter to the readers, and we got enough money in for two or three laptops.
Right.
So we're not asking for money right now.
Right.
I think it's important, you know, that, I just think the public is very cynical, and understandably so, even toward authentic and activist efforts, because everybody's always asking everyone for money.
Right.
We want to divorce this from the question of money. And living in Latin America, we can do this very cheaply. Mm. So that's what it's about.
Right.
But what we find is we're increasingly coming up against the malaise of the corporate media, the untruthfulness of it, and of the institutions that surround it. For example, when the coup forces in Venezuela began rounding up journalists, locking them up, invading community radio and TV stations, shutting them down, that kind of thing. These so-called international press freedom organizations, which have budgets of millions of dollars, they get their money from the mainstream commercial media and from some governments. Well, they'll make a big deal over if a commercial press reporter has eggs thrown at him. This is actually something Reporters Without Borders recently made a big fuss about. Oh, the poor journalist had eggs thrown at him because he didn't tell the truth. I don't really see that as a threat against press freedom. And then they ignore when Nicholas Rivera, community media journalist, gets thrown in jail on trumped-up charges that are absolutely and completely false. And they continue to ignore it. And so we take on those groups, too. And we're making some progress. The Committee to Protect Journalists in New York, as a result of something we published in the end of July, 12 days later, issued its first ever statement acknowledging that sometimes the biggest threat to press freedom can come from the commercial media owners themselves, and how these owners have placed their own reporters in jeopardy by falsifying and simulating their news and putting their byline on untrue stories that the entire public knows is untrue. And so we find ourselves in a 24-hour-a-day war for authenticity and honesty in journalism. And for this reason, we've also gotten an incredible response from journalists all over the world, and including in the United States, people who did enter the journalism career as a vocation, as a calling, with noble goals, and have seen firsthand how their news organizations censor them and keep them from being able to report on the things that they think are important and being able to do it in a truthful and honest way.
Right.
We also hear from journalism students and people who want to be journalists about their worries about this industry, which has very much lost its way. And we hear especially from young journalists. And so what we're going to be announcing in the next week or two is the Narco News School of Authentic Journalism. And once again...
Yeah.
What was that?
It was a whistle.
Oh. The New York Times is sending a Scud missile on. There's a mere rumor of...
My house is actually bugged. It's true. So this is the Authentic Journalism campaign that, you know, you actually issued a manifesto on back in July, and then this has kind of spawned this school. Is that, I mean...
Well, this, and actually, we applied at the 11th hour for a grant from the Tides Foundation, which is based in your fine city. They were giving out grants to do projects regarding the drug war in Latin America, and that sounded like us, and we put together a proposal, and we just heard last week that it was accepted.
All right.
To allow us to offer six full scholarships to fly six scholarship recipients who speak English or Spanish or both to the Yucatan Peninsula next February for a 10-day program. Now,
right,
that's going to be very interesting because from February 12th through 15th, there's going to be in Mérida, Yucatan, the first ever America-wide drug legalization summit. It's called Out from the Shadows. It's hosted by the Autonomous University of Yucatan, which is the public university, and by the daily newspaper Puresto, which is the third largest in Mexico, and the newspaper of my co-defendant, Mario Menendez Rodriguez, a very legendary Latin American journalist, and also by various drug policy reform organizations in the United States and in Europe. And it's going to be bringing together people from all over America and Europe to include from the coca growers in Bolivia and in Peru to the former Colombian Attorney General Gustavo de Grief to various attorneys and legislators and journalists and activists and people from North, South, and Central America to begin to internationalize the resistance to the drug war. It would be as if you would be stumbling across dozens and dozens of narco news stories with interesting players and newsmakers over a period of 4 days. And it's obviously too big for our small team to cover. So what we're doing is we're offering these scholarships, a free trip to the Yucatan in February, for the six biggest troublemakers and truth seekers that we can find to come and to work on the narco news team, to have experience working as journalists while being tutored and advised and counseled by some of the best known, most important authentic journalists in America. I can mention that Gary Webb is now a confirmed member of our faculty.
Wow.
The Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist who wrote Dark Alliance about the CIA and the cocaine trade. Mm-hmm. Some of the folks from Guerrilla News who produced the latest Eminem video are going to be part of it.
Interesting.
Of course, Mario Menendez and the entire staff of Puresto and the newspaper itself are going to be big parts of it. And wait till you see our faculty list. I think folks will be impressed, and I think we'll have a lot of applicants. And we're going to pay the way of six people and invite an undetermined amount of other applicants to come for free, but obviously without our being able to pick up their plane fare.
Right.
They're going to cover this important news event. I mean, news organizations give full coverage to sporting events, to ceremonial speeches of politicians, to entertainment right. events. I think it's about time full coverage be given to something that really matters. The
right.
first time that people from around America are coming together to plot a united strategy against a failed drug war that doesn't work. And so that's what we're going to do in English and in Spanish. And then after the conference, we're going to go to a seaside location with our faculty and with our students and conduct a series of seminars and workshops and on journalism, and so that all the readers can attend, at least vicariously. The journalism
right.
students are going to cover their own journalism school, and the courses that are offered are going to be then reported and put out over the internet on Narco News, so that really this information, this education, and this knowledge is not hoarded by a few, but given to the many.
Right. Excellent. And this is going to be, you're going to be releasing what the full list of faculty and all the details in
sometime
the next...
at the end of the month, I
okay.
think. Yeah.
Excellent.
And because the deadline for applications we know now will be November 15th, and we'll have a questionnaire ready when we announce it. We're getting all the ducks lined up. We're translating everything into Spanish because we're going to bring people from Spanish-speaking countries and newspapers and journalism schools as well.
Right on. Well, you know, in talking about all the mobilizing and organizing that is going on right now in the other America, I can't even keep up with all of the reports that are coming out every single day. And you know, I really would love to get some updates from you on some of the journalists that were taken into custody, were beaten, have been persecuted, basically, for seeking out the truth. Now, there were three community journalists in Venezuela at the end of July that were arrested. And
to my knowledge, two are out of prison, and one still is, Nicolas Rivera, who you mentioned before.
Right, correct. And I've seen pictures of what was done to him, and it was...
What you've seen is the pictures of the 41 rubber bullet wounds to a man who was carrying a camera for the community TV station.
That's right.
Down there, but who turned out not to be a Venezuelan, but a European, and not only that,
and that's what
for the European Parliament,
right?
Paul-Emile Dupré.
That's right, Paul-Emile.
And so yes, we published photographs of his wounds, which were quite extensive. In fact, they're still there at narconews.com, and along with our translation of his statement about what he observed and what happened.
Right. Now, do you feel that there was more of a response because he was a European? I mean, if this had been a local Venezuelan, it would not have been talked about at all.
Of course. We don't think that's right. And of course, mm-hmm. we pay a lot of attention to the Venezuelans who are being rounded up and harassed and hurt in serious ways, not by the government, but by the rogue pro-coup elements.
Right.
Because it's a country in which the oligarchy is very much bent on overthrowing by force the democratic choice of the majority.
Right. Now, what is the status with the DynCorp trial that was going on?
The lawsuit. Yes.
I heard was it last week that legislation had been passed in Congress okaying and even a doubling of the herbicides in some of the border towns, and
outrage. Okay, now let's for the reader who doesn't know what's going on. The United States has pumped more than $2 billion already into something called Plan Colombia, which is the pretext of trying to stop the cocaine trade, but really does little to do it. Already, herbicides have been used to spray 14% of the entire land area of the nation of Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, imagine that just for a moment. You know, one out of every 6 acres in the country defoliated completely, and it's ruined food crops. It's destroyed the fragile Amazon ecosystem. It's poisoned water supplies. It's caused widespread and documented illness among children and among elderly people and the weakest physically members of society. The spraying is going on also so close to the border of Colombia and Ecuador that it's drifting over onto the Ecuador side. So a group of Ecuadorian peasants who've been sickened by this and harmed by this, with the help of the International Labor Rights Fund, sued the company contracted by the United States government called DynCorp to stop this unsafe and toxic spraying. And this has gone to court. The United States government, through the Assistant Secretary of State, Randall Beers, filed an affidavit last fall that made all kinds of outrageous comments that this case should not proceed forward because it would interfere with national security. One of the most outrageous claims it made, remember that was just 2 months after September 11th,
correct,
was that the rebel forces in Colombia have received training from the Al-Qaeda in
mm-hmm.
Afghanistan. Well, he just had to file a new affidavit admitting that he lied and retracting that statement.
And other statements as well, right? I mean,
yes.
It was just
but
littered.
That was the most grave.
Right.
I mean, it gives you an idea of the prepotency of the people who are in power in Washington right now, that they just feel that after September 11th, the American public must be so gullible that they'll listen to anything if you put Bin Laden's face on it.
Right.
And this is what... they attempted. It didn't work. It's now backfired, and now they're exposed as liars before the court.
Right.
I mean, that's perjury. You do not sign a statement under oath saying, I swear this to be true under the penalties of pains and of perjury, and then have to later come back and say, well, it wasn't really true.
Now, what kind of an impact is that is this revelation going to have on the lawsuit?
You know, I don't know because I'm not one of the lawyers affiliated with the case. A good guy to interview would be Cristobal Boniface, the Massachusetts attorney who's representing the peasants.
Okay.
Or also Terry Collingsworth, the attorney from the International Human Rights Fund, Labor Human Rights Fund, in Washington. But you know, I mean, I do know something about law, having recently won a major case myself, and judges do not like it to be lied to. That it definitely is not helping the DynCorp government side of the case to have this revelation come out before the real meat starts of the trial.
Right. Now, yesterday I actually spoke with Dr. Oscar Arias, the former president of Costa Rica, and we,
and
he is an interesting guy, and we actually had a great discussion on demilitarization and the peace process in Latin America and U.S. intervention, and then
he also has signed statements in favor of the legalization of drugs.
Right, right, and he's done an enormous amount for Latin America in general in terms of trying to keep U.S. out of Latin American affairs, except in the area of trade, and this is where we kind of hit a gray area because he's definitely an ardent supporter of NAFTA and the FTA, and you know I'm wondering if you can just give an update. Argentina is in a state of absolute desolation right now, and Brazil has kind of taken the lead in terms of being the most economically stable, even though that's even a stretch. And you know, I'm just wondering if you can comment briefly on, you know, the economic state of Latin America post 9/11, and you know what U.S. intervention is doing to, you know, contribute to that.
Well, Latin America is a very wealthy region in terms of the natural resources, the agriculture, the oil, the minerals, the mining, the quality and hardworking nature of the labor force.
Right.
But what has happened for many generations is that outside imperial powers, starting with the Spaniards and later with other Europeans and later with the United States, economic interests have gone in there, and with the help of the group who I refer to as the oligarchy, the people who are the owners of you know, from the big families that are the technical owners of title of the property and the ranches and the mines and this kind of thing, have basically used terror for years to stop unions from being organized, to prevent the majority of the population from receiving a free education, even a basic education in public schools. To prevent farmers from organizing for a better price and better working conditions. And so what you've had is a situation of kind of imposed slave labor, where the wealth of these countries has been literally sucked out of them and deposited into Miami banks.
Right.
The people of Latin America are on still in the middle of a long march toward authentic democracy, where instead of having these sorts of things imposed on them from above, they would decide their own things. And I'm sure, if true democracy broke out and were permitted, different Latin American countries would come up with different decisions and different ways of dealing with questions like free trade policy, etc. And that's as it should be. I don't think you can say that there's one solution, that the same solution for Mexico is the same solution for Brazil. That's the imposed sameness of globalization and
right.
drug wars and these kinds of things. I think that democracy means that it comes from the bottom up, from the town, from the community, to the region, to the country, and in that order. And so I think you would see many things. Now, we did see Argentina was the most obedient country to the U.S. economic plans.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first country to dollarize its economy, which means it put the Argentine peso on a scale with a dollar, so the value never changed. That caused major inflation. And it completely followed the neoliberal model imposed by the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund of privatizing all its public industries, etc. And the country's economy completely collapsed last year. The banks had to shut down. People were limited to withdrawing the equivalent of $250 a month from their bank accounts. This caused a rebellion. It caused the exit of a president. And the state of Argentine politics is very much in flux, and they have elections next March in which anything could happen.
Right. That means, do you feel like there's room for reforms then, or is this something that, I mean, just IGOs need to go? I mean, because I think that's kind of the sentiment that Arias was expressing, is that, well, trade is good, and, you know, I encourage free trade between, because I think the U.S. stands to be in a position where they can help Latin American countries.
Well, I mean, that's Arias' position. That's Jorge Batlle's position, the president of Uruguay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not Hugo Chavez's position in Venezuela. It's mm-hmm. not Lula da Silva's position, the front-running candidate for president in Brazil right now. It's not the position of Evo Morales in Bolivia. It's not it's the position of the Fox government in Mexico, but it's not the position of the Congress or the Mexican people. So things are in a state of flux down here. There are battles going on. The question is, who decides? And obviously, if you believe in democracy, you believe that people ought to be able to decide these things for themselves.
Right. Now, talking about who is doing the deciding and the creative ways that people are fighting back, you know, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about just some of the independent people's movements that are going on. Like right now, I know in Argentina, they're setting up a parallel state almost, where entire communities are being built, you know, with their own, currency, their own bartering system, their own independent, social structure that's completely separate from,
autonomy.
Right, exactly, exactly.
I mean, the watershed moment for this came in January of 1994 with the Zapatista indigenous uprising in Chiapas, Mexico, in which it was very interesting because here, they declared 38 large municipalities as autonomous. They refused to accept government money. And so the government had no carrot. And the stick didn't work anymore. And these communities have sailed along over the past 8 years, and they're in better situation now than they were when they were accepting government aid.
Right, right. And I just think it's so important to really lend as much solidarity as we can to situations like that. You know, the protests for the FDA are coming up in Ecuador, and hopefully we're going to have people there from Liberation Radio. That would be
terrific.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrific. Well, you know, I mean, folks who were your folks from Liberation Radio who are in these places, you know, please do send your reports to us at Narco News.
That's right.
And we'll help get them out over the internet.
Right. Right. That would be awesome. We have about 5 minutes left. You know, is there, you know, anything that you really feel like is paramount to get out there on the air that people need to know that is going on in your neck of the woods in the other America that you want people to know about?
Well, I'm coming to California in early November to the National Convention of Students for Sensible Drug Policy.
Okay.
We'll be at the Anaheim Hilton November 8th through 10th.
Ooh, maybe we can get you to speak at Indie Media, too.
Well, that's...
I got you on the air now, and now you have to consent to it.
Sure.
Hey!
I'm going to be in the Los Angeles area. Some folks from the Los Angeles Press Club are putting something nice together for Narco News. And I'm actually been asked to chair a panel on musicians in the drug war, and right now I'm trying to get some musician friends of some renown to participate.
Okay.
Basically, let me just address my remarks to the people out there, not just the young people, but especially the young people who might be indie media journalists, who might be journalists working for a commercial publication, who might envision themselves as journalists someday or be studying journalism or be thinking about studying journalism. Journalism is in a state of crisis. Journalism, as Eminem would say, is in a state of 911. The commercial media outlets, whether we're talking about the LA Times, the New York Times, CNN, AP, Reuters, ABC, NBC, CBS, etc., have strayed very far from the initial mission of the First Amendment. The First Amendment, which said that Congress shall make no law impeding the freedom of the press or freedom of speech, it didn't say that only some people could have these rights. It didn't say that only people who got paid to do this or had a license could have these rights. It said these rights belong to everyone. And the commercial media, because it's a business, has begun to selectively ration these rights for a select few. And it shows in the coverage. The average citizen is no longer represented. His voice is no longer heard. Her voice is no longer heard. If they are referred to, they're referred to with condescension. For democracy to function, everybody needs a seat at the table where the microphone is. And in the coming years, I really envision a kind of civil war coming between authentic journalists and commercial journalists, with of course.
So is Eminem going to lead the way for that, or?
No, but I hope he follows.
That's right. That's journalistic. I think that was an interesting point that was brought up in one of the last issues of Narco News, and I know there was a huge response to, you know, the naming of Eminem.
I still have another pile of letters to the editor
on
that I haven't gotten around to printing yet. That's certainly, we were getting like 50,000 hits a day for a week there.
You talk about Bolivia or Ecuador or Venezuela, and people send in stuff, but then you talk about Eminem, and all of a sudden it's the hot issue.
Well, Eminem's very hot right now. He has the biggest selling album of all time,
But there was a reason behind what, you know, the point that you were trying to make, I think, is, you know, needs to be.
Yeah, this is a big flip the bird to the commercial media, because since 9/11 of last year, the media has been AWOL. It's been asleep at the wheel. It certainly has not coherently published any of the counter discourses to the official party line of what's going on in this world. And here comes this completely maligned and controversial, troublemaking white rapper with this new album, The Eminem Show, in which he very clearly speaks to the kids who are going to get called to fight in the next round of foreign wars, and very clearly states his opposition to it. And I think that's really behind a lot of the people who say, oh, we're against him because he uses bad words, or we think he's sexist, or we think he's anti-gay, or people have all kinds of interpretations on his music, most of them inaccurate. But I think what really bothers them is Eminem suggests the threat of united white and black underclass.
Hmm.
And of course, by white and black, I mean all the shades in between.
Right.
The white underclass is not supposed to exist in America, but there are millions upon millions upon millions of white Americans who are as fed up and as downtrodden as people of color. And the most scary thing for the system is the uniting of these folks. So I thought, I mean, it was kind of a rhetorical point we made to name Eminem Journalist of the Year, because he's never referred to himself as a journalist.
Right.
But I think the idea that this kid has been a better journalist over the last year than most journalists, I think it got the attention of a lot of journalists, too.
Right. Well, I think these are the links that we have to go to just to get something out that says something, that actually states a point, or actually, you know, causes, you know, people
to get
whiplash, turning their heads.
A lot of people came to our website, you know, because they were interested in Eminem, and a lot of them have stayed. It shows that since we published that, we consistently have an extra 5,000 readers a day.
Wow.
So that's encouraging, too.
Wow. Well, Al, we want to thank you once again for keeping it real and being on the show with us, and hopefully we can.
Stay tuned to www.narconews.com, and if anybody's interested in those authentic journalism scholarships for the Yucatan Peninsula next February, stay tuned, and we look forward to your applications
All right.
and your participation.
Good deal.